Today's episode of Darkness Radio is brought to you by HelloFresh. Remember those New Year's goals you promised yourself you'd stick to? Well, HelloFresh is here to help you eat better by delivering fresh ingredients and easy recipes right to your door, taking the hassle out of dinner time. Go to HelloFresh.com/darkness65 and use code darkness65 for 65% off plus free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/darkness65 and use code darkness65 for 65% off plus free shipping. Welcome in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Have a fascinating show for you today, folks. I believe it was Edie Brickell who said, shove me into shallow water before I get too deep. Keep your shallow water handy. That's what I'll tell you today. Actually, it's not going to be as overwhelming as you think. We're going to sit down with our guest today, Mark Fiorentino, and he's got a book out there that is called Master of Reality, Super Relativity, the Unified Field Theory. And although it may sound intimidating, it's not. We're going to make it pretty easy for you today. It's got some fascinating points to it. And actually, the man himself is pretty fascinating himself. Mark Fiorentino is a self-taught metaphysician who worked in the field of high-tech industry. He worked as an electronic technician at Harris Government Systems, working on a killer satellite missile guidance system. That sounds fascinating in itself. And then at IBM as a computer programmer. At the age of 10, Mark was fascinated by the works of Albert Einstein and particularly his quest to construct a unified field theory. 55 years later, his scientific research has completed the theory, but it has also opened up the door for a few others as well. Conspiracy theories about alien technology, NDEs, and a theory of super relativity, Mark has earned himself the title of Master of Reality. Let's bring that Master of Reality in now to Darkness Radio. How you doing today, Mark?
Fine, thank you, Tim. It's good to be here. I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to it as well, my friend. I tell you, I had so many questions, but I want to start it out first by starting slow. Let's start slow and talk about first your early years and how you became fascinated with this. And you do have a fascinating beginning at that as well, Mark. You know, we all become fascinated by different things when we were young. It's funny, you became fascinated with science at around the same age I became fascinated with radio, right around the age of 9. Before that, I was chucking a football around the yard, pretending I was Tommy Kramer or Fran Tarkington throwing to Ahmad Rashad. And I had the radio on in the background. And I always thought little men were in the radio talking to us and spinning records. And then my uncle Bob, who's been on this show, was working at a radio station. And he was trying to, he's trying to stall us while my aunt at the time was burning the turkey at Thanksgiving. And said, who wants to take a tour of the radio station? And I was the only one really enthusiastic about wanting to take that tour. And it changed my life. I guess I want to ask you here, Mark, what was it about science that changed your life? What was it at that tender age of 9 that the light clicked on?
As far as I can remember, I always liked science, even before the big day when I learned about Albert Einstein in a search for somebody born on my birthday that was a saint. I couldn't find one. The nuns at the church asked us to find a saint born on our birthday so we could make a little report and catechism. I didn't find anybody. All I found was Albert Einstein, so I looked him up. We had the Encyclopedia Britannica. Mm-hmm. I think it was the 1959 version or whatever. And the second I started reading about him, it just seemed so natural and so sensible and so very deeply interesting that I was hooked from just reading about his life story, his discoveries, theories. I was really very curious and interested about finding out how things worked physically. And his the introduction to the unified field theory, which was written by somebody else and then put into the encyclopedia, fascinated me. That whole concept of a fundamental field being responsible for everything really makes sense to me. I'd say it, you have to have the basic building block. And that was alluded to in this. And then I just harmonized with all that. And then I just started reading about science in general and eventually UFOs and was all geared to understanding how things really worked, mechanically speaking.
And follow me here, Mark, as far as this goes, because I know when I, around that age, around 8, 9 years old, we were starting, in this country, we were starting to get into the space shuttle program. And I know that that fascinated me more than anything. We were starting to really get back into space. And to me, it was an exciting time, especially with Space Shuttle Columbia. I started casting my eyes to the skies again. That was an exciting time. What was it for you that really got you? I mean, other than Einstein, what was it that got you into space and UFOs? And was it that unified field theory, or was it, what was it that got you to cast your eyes skyward?
As fate would have it, I moved to Florida, Winter Haven, Florida, when I was around 10. That would be 1965. And guess what was just gearing up then? The space program going to the moon.
Ah, yeah.
So I could step out into my backyard and see the rocket going up into outer space. And I got to tell you, that was inspirational.
Yeah.
And there was a period in time when I was a kid, I built my own rockets and I built them out of little metal pens. I would make my own formula, solid rocket fuel, which I won't say the details because I don't want any kids trying it at home.
Right.
Because it's very volatile chemical combination there. Mm-hmm. It could lead to accidents. But I was building, I had dug an underground trench to put the little rocket in, a little platform. I rolled wires out of the window and underground to connect up. I had a, what you would call a Tesla coil type like thing to make a big spark, which would ignite the fuel under the rocket, which would then burn up into the rocket, ignite the fuel in the little rocket. And I mean, that thing, I had even a little electric door. I would throw the switch and the little metal door would open up. And then I would throw the other switch to launch the rocket. And I mean, this thing would come out of the ground like a ferocious roar. Boom! And come right out of, I used to have my parents watch it from the window.
Oh, wow.
And so that's the other part that got me interested. I love the space program. And I still ask my wife, can we go down to NASA and look at the space history again? I just love that time. And I felt the spirit of adventure coming from the astronauts and being right here in Florida, being able to see the rockets going up was very inspirational and got me interested even more in science and eventually into UFOs, because I just saw rockets as being an incredibly inefficient way of getting around in outer space.
When you first found out, when was the first time you found out about Roswell, or the first time that you heard stories of aliens coming to this planet?
Oh, I'm sure it was in the mid-60s to early 70s. That's when I started reading the first UFO books that were out there by Jessup and the Project Blue Book, which was a slant kind of against UFOs mostly, but there was some stuff there. It was unexplained. And when I really was interested in the propulsion system very early on, I says, these guys are ahead of us. Of course, there's other being. I never doubted that. Just knowing how many stars and planets there are, when you know how many of those are, you know we're not the only ones in the universe. They figured out a way to get here. And I did the computations as a kid saying, even at light speed, it's going to take hundreds of years to get here. Even from the nearest star, it's going to take 4.5 years one way.
Yeah.
I says, rockets are way slower. It's not practical. So they must have solved the unified field theory.
Mm-hmm.
And they have some sort of anti-gravity system, because these things are floating across the sky and there's no propulsion systems visible. You know, there's no ion propulsion of any sort. They're not using jets. They're not using propellers. They're using a field.
Yeah.
So I got into researching that and trying to figure out what type of field, you know, what caused the anti-gravity field.
That's amazing that even at that younger age, you're digging into that and trying to figure out what it is that they're using. At that age, did you have an idea what they were using, or were you know?
Yep.
You did.
Thanks to Project Blue Book and some of the earlier UFO books. Every once in a while, I'm reading for clues, right?
Okay.
This is a mystery. We want to solve the mystery like Sherlock Holmes would solve the mystery. So you need clues. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while in those books, they mention high magnetic fields. So I keyed in on that. I says, yeah, you know, as a kid, I used to play with electronics, and I used to be able to change the radio signal by just having a magnet close and putting it near the back of the AM radio, and it would increase in volume and would change the station because I'm changing the inductance in the components.
Right.
And I remember reading that certain people in their cars, they could hear the radio changing, going off, static, the car would stall. Knowing enough about electronics, even at an early age, I knew that there's a magnetic field at work. A moving field, because a static field wouldn't cause the car to stall and induce voltages in the system and mess everything up. It had to be a magnetic field that was in motion. So just, I would store away this information. I read one time where an Air Force representative went out to investigate a site, and they brought a magnometer with them. And I says, what are you doing? How did you know to bring a magnometer to a UFO landing site?
Yeah.
That means you know that that thing is emitting a magnetic field. Magnometers measure magnetic fields.
Mm-hmm.
And they measured the grass at the landing site, and it was magnetized.
Hmm.
So I know that takes a really big, powerful magnetic field to do that. So I stored that information from teenage years all the way up till I made the theory of super relativity. I knew somehow magnetism helped cause an anti-gravity field. So in my research, I worked out how that works. I'm writing a paper now to describe that in high detail with the formula to describe the transformation from fields of electromagnetic fields of motion causing a magnetic field to the magnetic field that causes a change in the gravitational field.
You know, I can only relate this to radio transmitters in my day from working in radio, but the story came out maybe it was a year or two ago, or maybe a little bit longer, where people were having experiences with craft and were saying that they were getting burns from craft. Can you explain to our audience a little bit why people who are having experiences with the outside of a craft are getting burns?
Well, as I understand it, the people that reported that, it was a particular craft. I think it might have been in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And they did get close, but as I understand it from leakers, if you can trust what they say, some of them, I know Bob Lazar you can trust, about so much about the others, I don't know. But one of the problems in making having a UFO, it takes a huge energy source, and I'm talking in the megawatts.
Okay.
Especially if you're using one of the two techniques, which is high magnetics technique. And in order to do that, you need a very small power system that generates huge, huge amounts of power. And if we're making our own, the United States of America is reverse engineering these things, we might not have had access to the unity gain power systems that these craft from other worlds have. we may have to supply our own. And the best, most powerful ones are fission and fusion reactors. Well, we didn't have any fusion reactors that I know of in that day and time when these burns occurred.
Okay.
But we did have fission reactors. And odds are those early UFOs, some of the ones that were giving radiation burns, were probably our test UFOs. And they were spewing a lot of radiation out of them. The other way you would get burns is if that craft was putting out extremely bright lights, as many of them do. So in those cases, you could get sunburn. But from the high amount of ultraviolet light, and I mean, the lights on these, some of these craft are enormously bright. And so you can get from a craft, you get too close and you get enough of that bright light. It's just like being in the sun for many hours. It's incredibly intense ultraviolet light that is harmful to your skin. So there's the two ways that people are getting burns that I know of.
Understandable. How does, I know I'm jumping ahead quite a bit, and we're going to backtrack a little bit and start to go through a few of these theories in just a bit. How does laser fusion, and I know this has been a hot topic in the news lately, you'd mentioned fissure and fusion.
Fission, right.
Or fission, right.
Sorry about that.
Not a problem. How does laser fusion change the game now? As far as propulsion systems, because we've been told recently on the news that we're still 10 years away from being able to power cities with laser fusion, and that essentially this is, for lack of a better term, light without heat, that this is a way of powering a city without a brand new green energy. How could we turn this into a propulsion system and be able to power an engine that would be able to get us up to light speed to take us to the other side of the universe?
Well, whatever power system we have, it basically uses electricity in some form or another. And what is neat, I've discovered there's really, and from reading UFO books and some other inventors of the past, like Thomas Townsend Brown, there's two ways to make an anti-gravity craft. One is using very high-powered electrostatic field in condensers. And the charge on the plates actually makes an anti-gravity field and propulsion. And I would have to get deeply into the explanation of how particles move, and I'll try to keep it as light as possible. Sure. But the propulsion comes from either the intense electrostatic field creates poles, a north and south pole, and out of one side of the pole actually comes a gravitational field, and out of the other side of the pole comes the anti-gravity field. So what these craft do is, in the electrostatic, electrogravitic version, they tilt and they use the gravity field forward and the anti-gravity field behind, and you fall forward and inside of this spatial bias field, the anti-gravity field, which is the entire thing as it is. And the magnetic field is the same way. So what I'm going to come out with eventually, in order to create propulsion and an anti-gravity field, it's the same process. You're using the same mechanism in a magnetic field. If you look at on the internet, you go and look at a magnetic field image, okay, you see lines of force are going in one pole and out the other pole. Well, space is literally rotating. That's what it's representing there. It's rotating around, and that causes a field of attraction in one direction and a field of repulsion in the other, which is perfect. It's just what you need, but you to get this field of force, but you need a lot of it. The energy to mass conversion, in other words, the antimatter conversion, is a high amount of energy needed for that little bit of antimatter generation. So enough to lift the ship, you have to have a big power supply, or not physically large, but maybe the size of a basketball, that's generating megawatts, which is then conducted into plates, capacitive plates that create the lift and the anti-gravity field, or a magnetic field, which does the same thing. And basically, what's happening with the magnetic field or electrostatic field, they are rotations of space. And whenever you rotate something or twist, you cause that thing to stretch, that material.
Okay.
If you look at it, if you take silly putty and you slap it on a comic strip and look at the image and then you start to twist it, you'll mm-hmm. see it's stretching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the same thing is happening with space. It's a spatial bias drive. So when you use a magnetic field, it's a rotation of a space. That space is pulling apart. And that's the key to not only a propulsion, because you want to have a density gradient from the beginning to the end. It's less, 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 less dense. You cause a pressure wave across that whole thing. Pressure is what makes things move. There's where your propulsion comes from. Within the field, the highly intense magnetic field, let's say, okay. you got a pressure gradient from the front of the ship to the back of the ship. So it's self-propelled by its structure, its electromagnetic structure in space, which causes the pressure gradient, and you move in a velocity, in a direction. So you get everything you need from using energy and motion, typically electrons, either making magnetic fields or really powerful electrostatic fields. But you want to create this pressure gradient for the propulsion, and you stretch space, which means you can break the light speed barrier because there's less space within your, the density is decreasing when these fields are around. And this changes your ability to move beyond the speed of light, because the speed of light, this is a known fact. Speed of light is determined. C equals 1 over the square root of permittivity times permeability. That comes from Maxwell.
Okay.
That means that permittivity and permeability, what are those? Permittivity and permeability are two properties of a physical real space, having to do with the development of the electrostatic field and the magnetic field. They're limited by these two properties. So if you stretch spaces apart, these properties drop their values. And if you know, if you work that out in the equation, if those become smaller numbers, where they are located in the equation means the ultimate C on the other side gets bigger. The smaller those numbers go, the more you stretch space apart, the smaller those numbers go, the faster the speed of light. And scientists have proven this to be true. Material scientists have altered the properties of permittivity and permeability in metamaterials. And there's articles written on the internet say when they dropped the permittivity and permeability within these materials and they shot a light through it, the light went infinitely fast. And they're claiming that. They're claiming it, not me.
Okay.
They're claiming that when we shine light, by the way it comes out and how compressed it is, it's moving infinitely fast. And if you drop 1 divided by 0 is infinity.
Hmm.
So it all makes sense mathematically if you really understand and take the equations literally to mean what they mean. And so there's established scientific math and science now that confirms that equation. And that's how the UFOs do it. They change the area around the ship that they're in by pulling space apart with either a strong electrostatic field, which is a twist of space, or a strong magnetic field, which is a rotation of space. Either one causes space to stretch. Mm-hmm. When you do that, permittivity and permeability drop. Now you have the method for any civilization to go to any star as fast as they want to. So if I want to get to Alpha Centauri or Proxima Centauri, I can go beyond the speed of light, and not just by 1 or, you know, like Star Trek 8x8 warp 8. That's nothing. It's still going to take a lot of time to get there.
Yeah.
Months. You want to get there in 15 minutes? You go 20,000 times the speed of light. which is entirely possible.
Wow.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
It does. It does. When you put it the way that you just put it there, Mark, it really does make a lot of sense. But the way that you put it, it sounds like it takes an incredible amount of power to generate that field.
And that's what's been the big problem to solve in our world, because the power systems that are required, you need like a zero point energy system, which supposedly a lot of UFOs use, or you need fusion, which is not really the most efficient way. It takes a lot of energy to get a fusion system going, unless you use cold fusion. But then cold fusion was covered up by our government. Those guys that discovered cold fusion, it was actually right and actually true. Hmm. And scientists were hired, mainly at MIT, to discredit those guys. And there's been a lot of other guys out there who've come up with alternate energy 100% or more efficient power systems, and they get bought off or worse. So, and their power systems are never allowed to make it to the public because it's corruption and power companies and oil companies and especially electric companies do not want people to have the ability to generate their own power.
So why announce in the last month or so that this laser fusion is available and that in 10 years they're going to basically make it available to light cities?
I haven't read the details of how the laser fusion, the ones I've read in the old days, it takes a really powerful laser to do this. Mm-hmm. And it has to be contained in a magnetic field. A really powerful one. This is not something everybody could buy. Maybe a power company can do it, but not your average guy. What they don't want is everybody putting solar panels over their house, or worse yet, having something the size of a basketball operating autonomously without any connection to the power company making your power, because then they can't charge you for it anymore. And whatever this system is, I bet you they could charge you for it.
Yeah, it does sound like a system that is probably going to be operated by a power company or a municipality. Yeah. Because the way they made it sound in the article, or at least not only the article in the paper, but also the news articles or the news features on television, they made it sound like something that would eventually, when they say it takes 10 years, they were trying to figure out the technology that would be installed within a power company or an electric company. So it'd be something that it'd like be a switch over from coal, or it'd be a switch over from some sort of natural fuel burning to laser fusion.
Well, it sounds like to me, and it makes perfect sense, it's a technology they can control, distribute, and have all the patents to and everything. It's not something that, it's something they could use to generate electricity so they can keep on selling it to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you hear of somebody that, invents some kind of new battery or some kind of power cell or some new device that zero point energy, those guys are always stopped. And if you try to patent it, that's where they really get you. Because then they find out about you, they cover up the patent, if they do grant it at all, and you're told not to talk about this, not to sell it, not to distribute it, not to show how to do it. And one way or the other, those people are silenced. And it's part of the overall problem. America just seems to hate cures.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about cures for, how to generate power, but cures for cancer, cures for heart disease. If there was actual cures, and there are for those things, it would break the system medically. The medical system, if you could eradicate heart disease and take it from the number one killer down to the 101st or worse, it would demolish you know, because we got all these treatments and operations and stents and all these medications like Lipitor that don't work. A whole system, financial system, is built around people having disease, not really fixing the root cause of the disease, but treating the disease symptoms and so forth. And it's corruption. So the corruption in our system is what's holding us back from generating the power system. And I'm sure for discoveries like room temperature superconducting wire, I'll bet you that's been discovered already, and I'll bet you it's been covered up.
Yeah.
Because room temperature superconducting wire is what you need to make these super powerful magnets that drive UFOs. So it's our own selves. The humanity itself is stopping us from progressing forward.
Just before we take a break here, why stop our own progress? Why keep ourselves from not moving forward?
Well, from the military's point of view, they have a strategic military advantage in having this advanced technology and making sure the other guys don't. And so for all these earlier, in the early years, I'm sure that was the driving force. But they want to have the control, the power. There's control, there's power, there's, and the aeronautical companies, they want to have, be the only ones that have this technology and control its use and development. And so it's just a matter of corruption and people thinking, a small group of people thinking they need to have total, and that they've done this since from the mid 40s at least.
Interesting. I tell you what, Mark, we'll all this talk of flying and conspiracies has made me a little hungry, so we'll do this. We'll bring in our buddy Beer City Bruiser right now. I want to tell you a little bit about HelloFresh. Tell you what, at this point, Mark, let's take our break. When we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about destiny. We've been talking a little bit in this first half hour about propulsion systems. I want to talk to you a little bit about your destiny as far as how you take your theories and put them to work and how you're going to get your theories out there and get these actually put into motion. And we'll talk a little bit about how your destiny was set out, even from the time you were young up until even now, and how you get those theories put out there and set in motion. Our guest is Mark Fiorentino. The book is out there right now and available. We've got a link in the description of our program here. It's called Master of Reality. Again, pick up a copy of the book during the break. When we come back, more with Mark Fiorentino right here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Our guest is Mark Fiorentino. The book is Master of Reality, Super Relativity, The Unified Field Theory. We have a link in the description of this program so you can pick up that book and read a little deeper into what it is we're talking about today, as we're just going to have time to scratch the surface today, folks, on the theories we're talking about. Mark, let's dive a little deeper into destiny, shall we? And talk a little bit about destiny. You know, we I think when we're born, we have two things that get in our way. One is free will. The other is destiny, what we believe we're destined to do in this life, and then free will, which is sometimes pulling us away from destiny and the things we want to do and the things we're destined to do. When you were young, and correct me if I'm wrong here, did you have certain psychics that taught you that you had a special life plan in front of you?
Yeah, actually, the first one I ever went to when I was, I guess, around 19 or 20, somewhere in there, I was going to community college, and the professor was talking about Casadega, which is the spiritualist capital of North America. It's in Casadega, Florida. So I told my friends about it, and I said, "Hey, let's go get our fortunes told." I just thought it was fun, be fun thing to do. It was October. It was kind of spooky weather, and we went down there, and I met a lady. We found the lady after trying for a while. It was a bunch of us in two cars. A branch fell off of one of the trees that hit the other car and scared off the one group of guys. They said, "We're getting out of here. We'll meet you over in Daytona," which was up the road another 45 minutes. So me and this other friend named Duff, Jeff Jones was his name, but Duff, we called him. We found the lady. Her name was Martha McKay. And, your classic little old lady psychic, and she had the gift, and she laid out my life, correctly predicting my future career, which I was not into yet. My wife, the two children we were going to have, and I remember asking her one thing very specifically. I asked, "Would we be happy?" And I was watching her every move when she gave me the answer. And she paused. So I'm thinking she's listening to what they're telling her. Of course, she told me that day, "I have two guardian angels who are responsible for helping me in this life, a man and a woman." And I asked her this question. She paused and she just shook her head like this. No words were spoken. I thought, huh, that's not, I was really, hoping for a little details, because she had given details on everything else. But when she was asked this direct question, she just feebly nodded her head yes and up and down. I thought, I wonder if they're lying to me here on purpose. But I went with it. I said, "Well, it's a yes, and I'm going to accept it and not think about it anymore."
Sure.
And as it turns out, initially we were happy, but 16 years down the road, we got divorced. That was all part of the life plan. And I realized if they had said, "No, you weren't going to be happy," then I would be hesitant to get married. Every time I met somebody, I'd say, "What's the point? We're only going to end up being divorced, and I don't want to go through a divorce." So the wise thing to do would be just to give a simple yes so that you would live your life as if you didn't know this was ever happening at all. And that's the kind of the point in life is you gotta live the adventure, and you can't be told everything right down to the last detail, because then it influences your decisions and you actually don't go on your path. You steer off. If I were to not marry, I was planning, I had to marry because we were going to have two kids. That was part of the, and if I don't get married, then I don't have the kids. The whole thing gets hosed up. So there is free will.
You're right.
And there is destiny. And the trick is remembering what you already promised before you were born to do is to remember your life path. So, and that lady did tell me one other thing, but not to me in person. She told my friend that came in after me. And he told me when we were in the car on the way to Daytona Beach, she deliberately didn't say this part about making a great discovery or an invention. I can't remember exactly what he said, but I had the idea it was an invention or a discovery. And so many years later, I wound up writing the book when I retired. But again, that was deliberate, because if she had told me in the room when I was there, I would have asked her questions. I said, "Well, what? Give me more details about this fame and what is that all about?" Too much information is not good either. So there is
True.
a, the point is there is a life plan, and your guardian angels are there to help you remember that plan, to guide you to making the decisions that keep you on that path. Unfortunately, in life, a lot of people get off the path because of the temptations of materialism and so forth. And so they do something that's a deviation of that plan, and they take that back with them to the other side when they return after their life is over.
Very true. How did your guardian angel save your life?
Well, back many years later, after I got married, had my two children, I would drive back and forth to work. It took me about 30 minutes to get from home to IBM and back. So I would have a decision every day. There was this T intersection. I could go left. That was the quiet country roads, a little bit longer maybe to drive, but more peaceful. Or I could go right, lots of lights, lots of traffic, a little bit shorter. It was, one way or the other. Most of the time I went left because it was relaxing on the way home. And as I was approaching one day, I'm thinking, yeah, I'm going to go left today. And as soon as I thought that, I heard a voice over my left ear, as if somebody were standing right behind me and speaking into my ear. And the voice said, it was a male voice, it said, "Don't go that way." I whipped around because I thought there was somebody in the car. Mm. I never heard a voice outside of my head. Never.
Yeah.
And I shook it off and said, "Oh, I'm going to go that way." Then it said again, "Don't go that way." And there was nobody in the back seat. There was nobody I could see. And I stopped there and I thought, well, now I'm going to go that way because I want to know what just happened was real. And so if what happens and I go the other way, I won't know what went wrong. So I, like an idiot, I went that way and I heard no more voices, nothing. I went that way. And now the whole time I'm driving ahead, I'm looking ahead. I says, it's going to be a bad accident. It's probably going to be head on. So now I'm looking for something funny up ahead. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, about three quarters of the way home on this long straightaway, there's this truck swerving wildly, going across. It's a two-lane highway. And it's going into our lane and coming out. And then there's cars steering and going off the road into a ditch. And he keeps doing this, sweeping back and forth wildly. And I says, oh, no, he's coming at me. So the car in front of me bailed out. And now he's coming right at me. Bad decision I made, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I turned the wheel as hard as I could, screamed off the road, and I saw, we went by inches, and I saw him as he was going by, this guy in this pickup truck. He spun around and spun right and stopped right in the middle of the road, and I went into a ditch. And I said to myself, Mark, next time somebody tells you, don't go that way, don't go that way.
Right.
So I apologized to my guardian angels, which I figured must have been who was telling me that. But they told me enough to make me aware so that the destiny changed just enough for me to survive. Because if I had hit him right on, I was in a very small car, it probably would have been gone that day. It was an exit point. And to help me avoid the exit point, they had to warn me because I was going into it as a matter of habit. And they knew they could see ahead, right? Because people on the other side are outside of time. So they could see ahead as if they were up in a high helicopter looking at the scene and seeing this guy is coming. They're going to meet at this point and collide. And that's how they did it. And I've apologized to my guardian angels many times for not listening to them.
I got to ask you this, Mark. Do you believe that there are, and again, we're talking about destiny versus free will. Do you believe that there are certain points in this life that even though there are life plans put out for us, that there are these exit points that maybe if we take that wrong turn, we could screw up our own destinies?
Well, the exit points, every once in a while, all these circumstances occur that make them. Normally, you're steered away from them. They put a thought in your head, say, hey, don't take the elevator today. Hey, don't go into work today. And there's instances of that for the World Trade Center. People decided not to go to work that day, saved their life. So the guardian angels, God, spirit realm are making sure what happens is meant to happen happens, and what's not is avoided. So on any day, I would say there are millions of people who are saved and never realize they were saved from this wreck or this disease or this murder or whatever by, as I like to call it, there was a song that played on the way to that medium that one day, and the song went like this. This was a verse said, distant hands in foreign lands are turning hidden wheels, causing things to come about that no one seems to feel. All invisible from where we stand, yet the connections come to pass. All too hard to comprehend, they affect us nonetheless. And that's the mechanism that controls what you're just asked about. Mm. All of that's going on just beyond our view, just beyond our hearing. It's part of the process. And it's executed at a universal scale, not just for humans, but all the other beings, all the other creatures that are in all the other worlds. The other side is a lot bigger place than here. We're just a small fraction of reality.
Let's talk about that other side for a moment, Mark, because, you know, it's kind of refreshing to hear someone who's rooted and based in science talk about God, because there's a lot of people out there and a lot of people who are listening to the show who struggle with that quest for God. They, you know, or something on the other side. It doesn't even have to be God. It could be Buddha. It could be a pet rock that they want to worship, but they just want to know that when they die, there's something there. Recently, there's been talk of even a quantum heaven. There's been articles about that maybe that heaven is a quantum physical realm, that when we die, we pass over to a quantum physical heaven. Tell me from a scientific point of view, why you believe that God is there and that God is some sort of universal being. Why is this?
Well, because of the many experience I've had personally, including near-death experiences that I've read about, and I've read many, and I've seen many on YouTube and stuff. This is evidence. When a psychic, and this happened to me as well, another psychic when I was with my first wife, we went for a spiritual counseling, said, your mother's here, and your mother has a message for you. Now, what my wife didn't know and nobody else knew was that at night I used to pray to my mother who had passed away a few years earlier. And I used to have like a conversation with her. And there was this yellow chair next to our bed. And I would invite her to sit there and listen while I talked to her. Well, at the psychic, we sit down and she says, your mother's here. And she wanted to tell you she's been sitting in the yellow chair next to your bed and listening to everything you said. She's heard you. That's evidence. That's rock solid evidence. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe, you know, if you believe that person, how did that person know that? Because they were absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. It's exactly what I was doing. And I never uttered it aloud. It's not something that could have been found out over the internet or from talking to my wife or anybody. It was just in my mind, in my head. And she got that right. That tells me my mom has survived. She's living in an afterlife. God is there in the afterlife because there is an afterlife. And Jesus and pretty much every religion says there's an afterlife, or a before life, really. It's both. And so these kind of incidences over the years, and there's been many more, have convinced me beyond any shadow of any doubt, there is a God, there is a Jesus, there is an afterlife, there are guardian angels, spirit guides, whatever you want to call them. And religions in general, they're good for one main thing, is to help you have a personal relationship with God, which is one of the desired goals while you're here, is to have that personal relationship, pray to God, talk to God, and so forth. That's how I know, through deep, profound personal experiences, and also listening to near-death experiencers and psychics. The compilation of all this evidence I found to be overwhelmingly in favor of the existence of God in the afterlife.
What do you take a negative NDE to mean? I mean, you hear stories about, we just read one a couple weeks ago on Supernatural News of a, and it sounded almost kind of, I don't want to say ridiculous, but it sounded odd at best. And it was a man who, I don't know if he was a former priest or a priest. He had his near-death experience. He went to what he described as hell, and there the demons were singing Rihanna songs, of all things. and they were also singing Don't Worry, Be Happy by Bobby McFerrin. But in his version, he essentially went to hell. He was scared. He felt like he needed some sort of redemption, and he came back. What do you attribute a negative or an NDE where you go to a place where, you know, it's dark, hell is hot, and you don't have a positive experience?
I've given that a lot of thought. That's a question that continually pops up in my mind. Why is this 10% bad ones? And so I'll give you my opinion.
Sure.
Which is in part formed by listening to the details of NDEs, especially the bad ones. But the good ones, too, they also say there is no hell. But yet some of these people are experiencing hell. Mm-hmm. And the explanations I've gotten from the other side is basically you get what you expect in the first moments of your death. And if you've lived a really bad life, or you're an atheist, you don't get to see God. You get the void. You get the dark region. And in the void, even though God is still there, undetectable to you until you call out to him and acknowledge him, you get to experience negative people who are in a thought process that's kind of evil or angry or whatever, and they're milling around here. And I think a lot of these hellish experiences are tailored to your own mind and your own soul and what it thinks, and it creates that. And then all of a sudden, you're in something you created this, and this is why you're getting these weird circumstances, because you know you got your own personal reality twist that you're adding in to make your own personal hell. But invariably, I find in these NDEs that have that start out that way, they eventually, especially if they're an atheist, they wind up begging for help, calling out to God. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, it clears away, the tunnel opens up. See, it's up to you. You can't be in heaven if your thinking is angry or wrong, and you don't believe in it, or you're angry at Jesus or angry at God for whatever things happen in your life. You can't be there until that is resolved. So initially, a lot of people start out with this hellish experience. In other words, in order to bring back a warning for others, yeah, that's one purpose, and for themselves to snap out of this bad mental state that they've fallen into due to their life circumstances and their bad choices and whatever. So it's part of the process in some cases to get you to a heavenly realm or a higher existence so that you can get the help you need to heal and to be in heaven with all your family and friends. That's kind of my spin on it. Hell is just created sometimes by people who, usually atheists or agnostics, and sometimes, you know, it's just something that somebody needed to experience to wake them up, to get them to acknowledge there is a God, and God is pure love, and that's where we're all going to wind up sooner or later.
There you go. There you go. Let's switch gears a little bit here, Mark. Let's talk about the theory of super relativity. In order to catch people up who might have I don't want to put this in a bad way for you, Mark, but fallen asleep in science class in high school, or have just skipped that part or put that part out of their brain because they needed to remember their weekly grocery list or whatever it was. Remind people what the theory of relativity is and how does your theory differ or add on to Einstein's theory of relativity?
Well, there's two theories of relativity, the special theory and the general theory. The special dealt with special cases, basically saying the speed of light is constant, and it dealt with moving bodies and their speeds relative to one another and how things are affected. But there's inside of special relativity are these things, mathematical equations, which are transformations. They're called the Lorentz transformations. It really has to do with space and time and how things relate to each other as their different velocities. And general relativity is about the bending of space. Really, space is something, even though Einstein never really wanted to admit to that, and how this bending of space created gravity. But ultimately, these relativity theories were working underneath, moving toward a grand unified field theory, which was always Einstein's dream. And so basically, all of that work was the prelude to this realization of the unified field theory, which I can say in one line, electromagnetism and gravity emerge as aspects of a single fundamental field. Understand how that works, and that encompasses all of the cases of special relativity, all of general relativity, all are combined into one, which I've called super relativity, that extends them outward. There's more equations that go into a little bit more into special and general relativity. It's a matter of more of a wider interpretation. So really, it's all about understanding the geometry, which Einstein didn't want to admit, but while another physicist said, everything is about a geometry and the motion of geometry in this ether, this special realm. And so super relativity basically takes those theories, doesn't say that they're wrong. They've been misinterpreted. Special and general relativity have been slightly misinterpreted, and they're limited in these ideas they have about them, like gravity.
Okay.
They don't really know what gravity is. And what I did in super relativity is describe in detail what causes gravity, mechanically speaking. So it's metaphysical, it's philosophical. And it's also dealing with the reality of what really is the truth, and then writing papers and so forth to clearly define that, in fact, Einstein's original assumption, electromagnetism and gravity emerges aspects, different types of the single fundamental field, which turns out to be space or the ether.
Why do you feel like Einstein didn't push the theory further? Why did he stop where he stopped?
Well, he never really stopped. He worked on the unified field theory, but there was a part that he needed to get that I'm working on. Remember when I told you about how Yep. particles move?
Yep.
Well, if you ask a physicist how particles move, they'll try to talk you out of the idea that particles are moving. Quantum mechanics says where particles don't move. They just happen to have a probability wave that says they might be here at this time and they might be over here at this time. There's not anything actually moving. They don't actually have position. They'll throw that at you to try to get you to stop thinking about particles having motion and a path and a position, which of course they do, but what they will deny. And so Einstein was looking for this equation that it described how particles move.
Okay.
And he never found that equation. It's probably going to be a rank 2 tensor. And he desperately tried to find that equation. And I was just looking here to see if I could find, he makes a statement in, he basically makes a statement. He's looking for the formula on how particles move and he doesn't find it. Basically, that's what the statement says.
Okay.
And I'm working on that, but I've already worked out how gravity is actually caused, which is by the motion of accelerated particles, unbalanced charges in accelerated motion. That's the simple cause of gravity in the proton and the electron. So if you have something like this thing here,
mm-hmm.
I'll try to hold it so you can see it.
Yep.
There.
Yep.
The quarks moving inside of the neutron and a proton are moving in this form.
Mm-hmm.
This is a trefoil knot, which was discovered by an NDE person with Claire Dennis, which then when I read about it, realized that's what the quarks are moving. That's why they stay together. That knot holds them together. They're moving at 99% the speed of light. I already calculated that myself years earlier.
Okay.
And now, see, that's part of the life plan. Why would a guy like me who's got a very average background in math, all of a sudden on his own decide that he needs to figure out what the speed of quarks are inside of neutrons and protons? I worked that out. It took me weeks. I had this equation running in the computer, was calculating. You can see the graph as they were going to cross the crossing point. That would be the point where the up and down quarks inside of the neutron or the proton, they're all at the same speed. They generate the right mass to make that particle. When that point hit, and it did, as the calculations were going, you could see it. And just below the speed of light, they cross, and I says, that's the point, that's the speed that makes the mass for the particles inside of the proton and the neutron. So I had that, I used that to my next paper to write this formula that describes this thing
mm-hmm.
moving at 99% the speed of light and spinning and rolling, turning into a sphere, which caused contraction at the perimeter of the sphere, all moving at 99% of the speed of light. You do the math, it calculates out, and you get the exact number for the neutron and proton, linking electromagnetism to gravity.
Huh.
It's been done. It's solved. Now, the point is getting enough physicists to read it, to realize, to accept the literal interpretation of that math. And I spent 50 pages explaining, which this I've discovered physicists don't like words.
No, they don't.
And both of them complain there's too many words. But I says, I put those words in there. Everyone is carefully chosen so that you visualize what that math means. You need to take it literally because it's describing the mechanism behind the force of gravity. And so now somehow, some way, I've got to describe the force of motion, because without motion, this universe dissipates into nothingness. If particles didn't move, light photons didn't travel across space and enter your eye and strike your retina, you wouldn't get images. Light has to move.
Yeah.
Electrons have to move. Everything has to move to create gravity. Gravity is an emergent field. And magnetism. Magnetism only happens when electrons move. As they move through space, they're twisting space, and space is rotating. That's the magnetic field.
Yeah.
If we froze everything, if there was a magical power that could do that, the universe would go black. All of physical things would dissipate. The desk in front of you, you couldn't tell, it wouldn't be there. It wouldn't be seeable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what super relativity has done, is made sense out of what particles do. It's simply this. The motion of particles through space tells space how to bend. The bending of space tells those particles how to move. So if you put a magnetic field in, the charge will go this way or go that way. It's all about an interaction of particles to space that makes the fields of force that brings in reality. Reality emerges really from the motion of electrostatic fields, which is the fundamental field of force.
Wow. All right.
There's a lot to take in there. I know.
No,
I try to pack it in as sensibly as I can. What we're talking about. We're talking about this physical reality.
Right.
How this thing works. Mm-hmm. People deep down want to know. Maybe they're more interested in who's on American Idol or whatever. But deep down, when you get them quiet and by themselves and they think about things, most of them will think about these things and maybe they'll quickly pass over it. But there's a bunch of us like you, mm-hmm. like me, mm-hmm. there's millions of us who want to know what the heck is going on here.
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about today.
That's right. That's right. So let me ask you this. And as we get close to the end of the program here, Mark, let me ask you this. You said, you know, it's hard to get, for lack of a better term, to get these peers to sit down and review these theories. How do you get them to sit down and get them to review?
Well, I paid one physicist. I says, look, I'll give you $100. You review, you, I don't care. I'm not talking to you. You don't have to make, you know, give me compliments or anything. If you have problems, you write them down. You tell me what's wrong. And they found the one guy I paid to do it, another guy I didn't pay to do it. Mm-hmm. He kind of did it, but he was overwhelmed by the words. And he told me, I'm not good with words. I looked at the math. I understood it. And I could tell by what he said. He did understand it. He says, all you have here are things in motion. How does that make matter? Well, if you read the words,
right,
the 45 pages before I put the math, you would understood perfectly that it's those motions of those things going through space that are causing space to turn, to bend, that causes mass. I explained it all, but you didn't read that part. So, and I can't make you, but I paid the other guy to do that. And he understood it. And he said, part of what you said, it's also my theory. And so we agreed in some parts.
Huh.
But he had his criticisms, and I want those. Why would I want those? Because I want to be prepared for when I have to defend it someday.
Right.
I'm going to know all their points ahead of time,
yeah.
And I'm going to be able to argue them. And what I did with this one, we did have some conversations, and every time he had a problem, I was able to explain it, my way out of it, and unknot his knot. Okay. And that pissed them off.
I bet it did. I bet it did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting stuff, Mark. The book is Master of Reality, and it's available right now. We've got a link in the description of the show. Again, fascinating stuff, Mark. And again, folks, we only scratched the surface here. Master of Reality, Super Relativity, the Unified Field Theory. Mark Fiorentino is our guest. Mark, I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. It's enjoyable. I love talking about this stuff. It is what I'm interested in. And I know there's people out there that want to hear it too. So I'm happy to present this stuff and get some people thinking. And who knows what's going to happen? The adventure continues. I appreciate it, Tim, for letting me share the adventure with you on this show.
Well, and we appreciate you sharing the adventure as well. Thank you so much, Mark. See, folks, I told you, keep your shallow water handy. You may need it. You may need to be shoved into it before you got too deep. We actually didn't get too deep today with Mark Fiorentino, but we appreciate having him here. Again, the book, Master of Reality, Super Relativity, The Unified Field Theory. I want to thank Mark for joining us today. And as we had a good time today, getting a little deeper with science, a little bit deeper with the supernatural as well, as we got a little bit out of him as we mixed the two together today and got a little bit of the best, kind of like getting your chocolate and your peanut butter mixed together as well. Want to thank everybody for a great week this week on Darkness Radio. Want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in. I can never thank you guys enough for tuning in to each and every episode of Darkness Radio and supporting us here on the show. If you enjoyed the program, be sure to tell a friend, tell a relative, tell a neighbor, just tell people how much you enjoy the show and where they can find the show. Again, we're available on all podcast outlets, wherever you listen to your finer podcasts. And just make sure that you spread the word about Darkness Radio and get us out there. Also, if you enjoy the show, be sure to rate and review us. Give a 5-star review for us. We'd appreciate that as well. Bruiser Malley and Jess and I would appreciate anything you can do to spread the word about Darkness Radio and continue growing the show along with us. We would appreciate that greatly. Also, I want to wish you a happy weekend this weekend. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy your family and your friends. Go out and have some fun this weekend. I'm not going to beat you over the head with anything this weekend. Just enjoy the time you have. And remember, the time is short. Remember to enjoy that time with friends and family. Be sure to take care of yourself and each other this weekend. Also want to thank our sponsors this week. Without our sponsors, we're nothing. And we would hope that you would patronize those sponsors. Be sure to try those sponsors as well. We want to thank HelloFresh for being on the show this week. Again, 65% off. I can't believe that deal. 65% off that deal if you go to HelloFresh.com/darkness65 and put in the code darkness65 at checkout. You'll get 65% off your total order with HelloFresh. And also, we want to thank Microdose Gummies, who's always been there with us, always been in our corner. Again, if you want to learn more about THC, just go to microdose.com and at checkout, put in the code darkness and you'll get 30% off plus free shipping at microdose.com. We want to thank Microdose Gummies as well for being on the show and supporting Darkness Radio. Again, we're incredibly blessed to have you with us, to have our sponsors with us. And we just want to continue to take that attitude of gratitude and continue thanking you and our sponsors for being with us and being in our lives. We're incredibly grateful because you guys continue to allow us to do what we do and do what we love. And we appreciate all of you more than anything. You continue to allow us to do what we love to do in this world, which is to educate, entertain, and enlighten you. And continue to do a bang-up job at that. So thank you. We appreciate you. So go out, have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Tuesday for True Crime Tuesday right here on The Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.